The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And it's now the third person from my diploma, from my WSET graduating class, from Mercado. Davis Snyder is with me. Davis, thanks so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, let's now, I shouldn't say I'm at Cantina Mercado. Which location are we at here?
So this is Cantina Mercado. This is the newest addition to the Mercado family. We're at Yonge and Wellington in a brand new, beautiful building. And yeah, just downtown Toronto. Here we are.
It's gorgeous. I'm sure the mics will pick up a little bit of all the construction, but we're in Toronto, so there's always construction. Actually, I want to go in a completely different direction for this interview.
Okay.
Because I have all these questions written. We'll see if we get to all of them. But it is, at the present point, 9:03 a.m. This is not usually the time for people that work in restaurants, especially on the wine side, where I'm talking to someone. And a lot of this has to do with not only your promotion, but also this works better for your life and family life, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it's I'm 8 years with the company, 15 years in the game, and been doing wine a long time. And you have to evolve your lifestyle. I have a young family, and you know, you gotta fit stuff in when you can. And that's like, it ties into purchasing and the wine program in general. You know, we're tasting all the time. It's not just a kind of grinding away on the floor at night and all that. You know, it's I think it's evolving. And in terms of people's lifestyles, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, how different is your lifestyle now versus when you started at Mercado?
Completely different, I would say.
Okay, I want to start with this. What time was your alarm set when you first started at Mercado versus now?
Well, I didn't actually set an alarm because I just work nights all the time. So you just kind of wake up whenever, you know, you felt ready to get up after a night of working the floor and closing the restaurants and maybe going out for a couple pops and some wine and a little bit of revelry. So, no real guidelines in terms of time frame. Just get up and go for it. Come in for two or three and then, you know, set your day that way. And now, of course, the more responsibilities you take on and, you know, the more you have to kind of fit stuff into your schedule. But it's still a lot of fun. I still love it. You know, it's been a great journey, and I still like working nights and being on the floor and selling wine and touching tables and all that stuff. But, you know, you have to approach it a bit differently.
And, I mean, just you were saying before we went on air, you must at some points, even though this is much better for your life and you've one child, you've got more coming on the way, which again, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Twins,
that's
crazy.
Twins, that's fantastic. It's great. I'm a twin myself. My mom said the best thing that ever happened to her. Maybe she says something different to her older son. But
okay,
you know.
Okay, great. Yeah. That's a good perspective. I like that. Thank you.
But, I mean, how much have kids sort of changed your lifestyle when it comes to the restaurant? Before that, sorry. My other question was, how much sometimes do you miss the action at working at night?
I mean, I do. I mean, you miss the adrenaline, the experience, like the kind of the experience of it, the setup, the drama, tasting with staff. You know, I still try to fit it in. You know, I mean, but I definitely, you know, you miss being and tasting all the time. Like, I was in a role last year where it was full on committed to the floor wine role, and it was just tasting crazy wines all the time. But I lacked a lot on the other end. Like, I found I was, you know, missing out on family time and home time, and that's really important, you know. And then again, kind of energy levels and just that other aspect of your life is lacking, and you don't feel the greatest. But you know what I mean. So you kind of have to balance. Life is about balance, especially in the wine game.
Yeah.
Long term perspective. I will say, you know, moving into more of a managerial role and all those aspects of being a general manager and still doing wine and, you know, kind of toning it back a bit, we've been able to kind of really expand our cellar and focus on all that. So that's growing out a lot instead of just, you know, drinking more often and all of that. We've been able to kind of curate and purchase stuff at home and kind of sit on stuff and be more serious about it that way, which has been kind of cool.
Well, I want to get into the wine philosophy for Mercado, but first you poured a little rosé. This is a definitely a much darker, this is a little more darker rosé than I am used to. What'd you pour? What are we drinking?
So here we have a Chiaresuolo The Abruzzo Superiore from Bosco. We are partaking in Giro d'Italia at the moment, which is an Italian festival, food festival that restaurants partake in Toronto. Each Italian restaurant selects a region to represent, mm-hmm. and we curate menus based on the traditional dishes from the region, and we also do wine pairing. So this is kind of a cool style of rosé from Abruzzo, where it's more of a kind of a red wine than a rosé with longer skin contact, and it's made with Montepulciano grapes. So it has a more robust body, and it's more full-bodied, and goes well with kind of the more the robust dishes of the region. They're heavy on lamb and meat dishes and pecorino and cheeses and all those things. So it kind of fits in with that. Lots of bright cherry, kind of darker, herbaceous, more of a Tavel kind of rustic,
very
full-bodied, and savory note.
For people that are just getting into wine and the idea of rosé pairing with lamb, that might seem like an odd combination, but you can, like, when you taste this and you just sort of visualize the food you're talking about, you're right. It perfectly sort of matches up. It's delicious. Thank you very much. I don't remember the last time I had a rosé from Abruzzo. You know, usually it's,
usually
it's France or Spain or something like that.
Yeah.
So what is the wine philosophy here for Mercato?
Well, I mean, we still, since day one, have been focused on the classics of Italian regions and focusing on heralded, you know, producers and grape varietals, but also taking the time to represent and find unique varietals and unique DOCs and regions as well.
Which is easy to do in Italy. There's so many.
Yeah. So, I mean, for instance, you know, we're working, this is a cool wine style, but we also have a Pecorino with the first course that we're utilizing, which is an indigenous varietal, which is pretty hot right now, from Abruzzo. And, but we've also expanded, like, you know, we don't sit on our laurels. Like, we've expanded, our offer. We're now offering wines from other regions of the world. You know, we were 100% Italian with some Ontario stuff before, but now we're kind of doing some Spanish wine and French and a little bit of New World stuff. And, you know, we've always liked to experiment. I mean, we've been working with, you know, talk about like the natural wine movement. We were buying Cos and Okapinti, you know, when they came to market 9 years ago, and still like to experiment and do cool things. You know, but we still like, you know, there's nothing wrong with a little Amarone as well.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about the indigenous varietals in lesser regions is you can find some good deals and that's really great table side when you're on the floor talking to tables and recommending new stuff and interesting stuff. That really is what the wine experience is all about. So we've always been heavy duty on training our staff and kind of bringing in these new cool wines and sharing them with everybody. So,
and it's interesting.
It's always been like that with us.
I've often said that Italy is a great, like, is a great source for value wine.
Absolutely.
Hell, even at the LCBO, you can get, you know, a varietally correct Chianti Classico.
Yeah.
It's like $14.
Yeah.
When people ask, you know, where should I go for wine that's good, that's price point, I tell them, you see Napa, Sonoma, Bordeaux, and Burgundy? Okay, you're not going to see them anymore. And, usually, you know, Italy, I mean, unless it's, you know, Barolo, Barbaresco, but
right.
Italy is a great place to go
for
good value wine.
I think even on the high end, like if you can spend $60 on a Brunello that has the quality and the complexity and the depth and the, you know, of any kind of fine wine region like Bordeaux or Burgundy or anything, has the structure and the, you know, respect to its varietal and where it comes from. I mean, that's not bad either. You know what I mean? Even at the top end, you can still, versus First Cross Bordeaux or whatever, or Grand Cru Burgundy, it's still right up there in terms of quality and all that stuff. So, I mean, we sell lots of $24 glasses of Brunello here, you know.
Actually, I want to get to it. I saw in one video or one interview, you talked about your favorite wine, and it was a 2010 Brunello. We'll get to that. What advice would you have? People have come to Cantina, and they love Italian food. They know they love Italian wine, but, you know, maybe they're a little bit intimidated or, you know, they don't understand that region or, you know, what advice would you give?
Just ask for the sommelier ask for the wine director or the wine person right away and just don't be afraid to do that. We have a really strong team here. We have Taryn and Sean and Lee Stein on the team, and I think people should just, and even our servers, be, you know, just be okay with asking for help, you know, and asking for some direction. We have curated the list that kind of goes, is listed by style, which is kind of cool. People are doing right now. It's by like light, bright, zippy for reds, and, you know, fruity and is one section. And then we have classic, rich and full bodied. So it is kind of user friendly.
Yeah.
And we create it that way. But it's interesting how you do. I do sell one. And I do hear over here people saying, oh, it's from the light, bright, zippy section. But still people are asking for us and asking for direction, even though we put all this effort into it. It's
how
interesting.
How much does that help? Because it seems, and you know, you see it more in the last 10 years or so, the menus that are trying to help. It's almost like a point of, you know, just making the entry point into wine a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Having like, how much does that help the wine consumer when they see these very easy to decipher sort of terms? And then the follow-up question is, do you ever worry about, you don't want to make it seem like the wine list is condescending, like going, oh, this is bright red wine for you?
Right. I mean, it's, you know, there's probably a handful of wines on there like that a trained wine professional would say, does that wine fit into that category and vice versa?
And
so
that trained wine professional should shut up. You're out for a meal.
Right. Exactly. And take it easy. But it does, you know, we're a big restaurant. I feel like we're still able to touch tables from a management perspective and, you know, to recommend wine. But it does help at a busy pregame service. Maybe someone, you know, can look at it and feel a little more, you know, safe with what they're choosing. I think the wine buyer and the diner and the guests that we have in Toronto are pretty savvy as it stands. I think it shows that we care, that we've thought about the wine list, and we're putting effort into it. And but at the end of the day, it's like I said, it's interesting that people are still asking for help and still asking, you know, there's still questions there.
Yeah.
We haven't solved all the, you know what I mean? It's not.
Considering that, like, someone at your level, and I consider myself like a well-educated tourist, you know, when people go, oh, Matt, you're a somm, I'm like, no, I haven't worked in it every day. I feel sheepish with that term, and I feel almost it's insulting to the, you know, the people that work in it day in and day out. But we ask questions all the time, and we get confused, and we still discover new varietals in Italy alone, so it's easy to see why the customer would, you know, be going through the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're still in the show business, you know. It's not just food business and wine business. It's still kind of, people want that interaction. And you still want that. I think that's really when you feel like you've created a good experience, a good wine experience, is when there isn't any, the interaction and, you know, you've been able to sneak a cool wine pairing in or touch the table after with some cool Madeira or, you know, we do have the Paul Miles Madeira.
You
rainwater.
Got Madeira here?
Yeah, we have the Madeira.
Oh.
Shout out Paul Miles.
Yeah, it's one of the hardest things to, there's,
yeah, we got it.
This
great.
Is gonna, here's
Surciel.
Gonna be, here's gonna be the douchiest part of this entire interview is what I'm about to say. There are two things I always seek out, I almost never can find. Madeira and a good sherry cocktail. And I understand that in terms of problems in life, that's near the bottom, you know, and I know that's douchey, but those are two things I always seek out, and it's hard to find.
Well, we have the Madeira. We'll work on a sherry cocktail for the summer, okay?
That'd be done. I saw the video on Wine Wire that you did, and always like that website. I've bought wine for them in the past. How does a bottle get on your wine list? Like, what are you looking for? Like, if you're the Simon Cowell here, and there's all these bottles of wine, how do they get on?
I mean, well, it has to be good, you know, first and foremost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like people say...
Hold on,
say,
let me
people,
write that down.
Yeah.
To be good.
Well, people say, I mean, when people come and... Well, I'm people, I say agents or wine industry people trying to sell or trying to get into the program, like, they say, what's selling and what's moving? And it's... I you know, everything kind of moves. And what I also like to taste through everything, and I'd like to make sure that it's a very good wine, that if I put it on the list, the guest will know that they're getting something cool and something good.
Yeah.
And it'll be above their expectation, you know. So when I taste things, if something blows me away, even if I have 10 Brunellos, I'll add that 11th Brunello if it's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
So, I also love a good deal. To like everybody,
yeah,
so when
it's a razor thin margin, this business
exactly. Right. So when you're, and that's, I think that really comes in. I think I'm probably like a pretty quiet taster, and I kind of take my time and go through every bottle and make my notes. And then if there is a quality to price ratio thing, it's we go from there. If it's a feel like we're gonna bring something and put it on the list, that's gonna be exciting, and people can can enjoy, you know, that's the kind of where it is. So I'm not just going to put something on because it's cool or, you know, if there's any other aspects to it like that. I mean, I just first and foremost, it has to be good. And that's pretty much, you know, everything else kind of goes from there.
What's your, and I know it's, you know, eventually you're going to have three children, which again, congratulations.
Yeah, thank
you. Fantastic. And of course, you can never
pick
all your children are the same and you're equal, and you're going to love them all the same.
Of course.
Which, of course, is not true. Sometimes you're going to love one. I can say this. Sometimes my mom loved me more than my twin brother, Josh, and I'm sure it was vice versa. On your, what do you really like on your list right now? What is just really singing to you?
There's a couple of, like, cool. I mean, I love the Let's Air we have. It's a Terrell Dago from Elizabeth the Four Dory that, you know, it was an off vintage for her, you know, heralded wine, female winemaker from the Trentino Alto Adige region.
Which, yeah, for people who don't know, northeast part of Italy,
yeah.
Specializes whites and more lighter reds, a lot of stainless steel.
And so it's kind of like a field blend they did. It was a tough vintage for them, so they kind of put everything together and it made this really cool, crunchy, light, bright, zippy, fresh wine that's really, really, really cool. We really like that. We have a really cool Chardonnay from... it's escaping me right now. Just caught a...
Yeah, we can come back to it.
Zone. Okay, cool.
Yeah. No, okay, here's the thing. I'm going to ask you more questions. The moment one comes to mind, even if we're in the middle of the answer, and you're talking about the time you and your father really connected, just blurt out the name of the Chardonnay.
Okay.
And we'll go from there. I want to play a game, something. It's called the LinkedIn game. It's
okay.
Basically where I go to when I do my research. If I find you have a LinkedIn account, I cut and paste all the places you've worked,
okay.
And then we talk about them all.
All right. Okay.
So it's a. I need a new title for it. The LinkedIn game. That's not very.
All right. Cool. So you're gonna go on my LinkedIn right now.
I've already got. Yeah. I've already.
Okay.
Got,
I don't know. I don't really spend a lot of time on my LinkedIn, so you probably know what you're gonna get.
Even less.
There might be some high school stuff there. So.
Yeah. Take me what was going on. Take me a typical night in 2006 when you were head waiter at Centro Restaurant and Lounge.
Okay. At Centro. It's funny. It's, you know, it's Centro, but people say Centro. They call it Centro. Or the guests would say Centros, like as if it was a person.
By the way.
As if, like, Centro is a very typical Toronto.
As someone who's part Italian, shame on me. Got him to win. Those are the hardest things for me at class. God,
right.
I
know. It's
mangled
tough.
Names.
Tough. Yeah. But about epic, I mean, high drama, epic. Amazing nights. I mean, one of the most beautiful dining rooms in Toronto, and was, you know, that was my first job in the front of the house, actually. That's where I fell in love with wine. I was a cook before that and a chef before that. My mom was a chef. I was cooking for about 5 or 6 years before I got a job bussing tables at Centro. So it was like my first job in the front. And I literally, first night on the floor, almost peed my pants.
Yeah.
With just the chef being in the intensity of the service and the psalm and the clientele and the suits and the drama. This is like fine dining tablecloth stuff, huge wines. And back in the day, it was sink or swim, really.
Yeah.
It was like, go and figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, it was very, very, very incredible and exciting. And I remember that's, you know, tasting a 1996 Lefebvre. Chachet Montrachet, and that was it. That was my wine with the Somme with Jeremy Geyer one night that a table sent back, and they thought it was off, but it was just a beautifully aged Burgundy truffle notes, and I can still remember all that honey and beautiful butter and all that stuff happening. And that was it. That started it. And then doing inventories with Jeremy, and, you know, once a month, and touching all the bottles, all the first growth Bordeaux and all the Burgundy, and all of that stuff was just amazing. So... No, it was really, really cool.
So Montrachet, that's one of the ones that got you hooked.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
It's a dandy, yeah.
Yeah, and once again, for anyone out there that says anything but Chardonnay, you're an idiot. And this podcast is mostly judgment-free, and it's supposed to be not intimidating, and whatever you like is fine. Except if you say you don't like Chardonnay, you're an idiot. Flat out say it.
That would be a good podcast for you.
So, okay, I want to stick on this for a second. When people go out to a nice restaurant, they don't know sometimes that the people serving them might be just stressed out to hell.
Yeah. I mean, it's keeping it together is the art of it, I would say, and not wearing it on your face. And that's kind of what makes it so incredibly exciting, is you have to really think every day.
Yeah.
And you have to use your wits, and you have to try hard to pull it off.
Yeah.
It's not kind of just an autopilot. No, you really have to work hard, and you need every ounce of your intellect and soul to kind of really, really pull it off, especially in those environments, you know. So that was always something that I got from it, was you really enjoyed the beer or the wine.
Yeah.
After work, you know.
Oh, just because you need, like, you're stressed. Like, when you're working, especially when it's a full night, you're on the entire time.
Yeah.
Now, this is very different, but, like, you know, I host radio shows, and when I'm on for either 2, 3, or 4 hours, you're on. And sometimes when that show is done, the red light goes off, you're like, ugh.
Yeah,
you
know, totally.
And you're more tired than maybe you should be. And for you, though, it's much more physical. But yeah, just that moment when the last person's out, that must be just such a relief.
I mean, it is. It's also, you have to have the adrenaline still pulsing through your body. It is, you know, it is a relief.
You can't go to bed right away.
Yeah.
It's not like, what, you're done at 2. You can fall asleep at 2:40. Yeah. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, and also there's a lot more work after that, too. So you're kind of like, oh, God. Then you're like, okay, now I have to clean up and polish every glass. And so it ultimately continues on. So it's like you kind of got to keep the intensity going so you can get out and make last call.
Yeah.
So that's another struggle. Then you're really like, ah, that's when you do it.
To find another bar to go out for last call. Where is Boar's Rock Vineyards?
So Boar's Rock Vineyards is in Western Australia. Mm-hmm. And... close to Busselton. It's outside of Margaret River.
Yeah.
And it's the largest winemaking facility in Western Australia. So they made a wine called Evans and Tate, as well as a bunch of other big label wines in Australia. Evans Tate being the most popular SSB style, when I say Sauvignon Blanc Semillon blend.
Yeah.
In Australia. Mm-hmm. So like a big commercial winery. You see Evans and Tate. I've seen Evans and Tate in our market in Toronto once, and that was years ago. But yeah, I worked there for a vintage.
And what was that like? You worked a vintage there.
It was crazy.
That was 2008.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was, so I did a few vintages. It was the last vintage I did. I did one in New Zealand, one in France, and one, and this is the final one in Australia. And it was the largest. It was literally a factory. So it was hard hats and steel-toed boots and... Yeah.
So not the magical, romantic, small vineyard where mom and pop are farmers first and winemakers
exactly,
second.
Yeah, none of that. It was like roto fermenters. They had presses on tractors, on like train tracks.
Yeah.
So they would have fermenters that would move, like presses that would have like big shoots of fermenters and a hatch in the bottom, and you kind of would rack the finished wine off of that, and the skins would just go, you'd move this press on this train track underneath the fermenter, and all the skins would kind of go boop into it, and they'd press the second wine off of it. That's how big it was. 250,000 liter tanks. I would, like, 4 stories high, I would go to the top and make additions of acid and stuff. You could see over like the whole kind of Australian landscape and kangaroos jumping around and all that stuff. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So you're this huge outdoor 4-story wine vat, you know, acidifying the wine, and then
absolutely.
You see kangaroos in the background.
Yeah, kind of take a minute and look over the outback, as it were, you know. So, yeah, it was cool. You know, I remember on my way to one day in the morning, like on our way to work, on our way to the vineyard, onto the way to the winery, we actually hit a kangaroo.
Oh.
It was sad.
Oh,
lots of kangaroos.
Did it hop in front of you? Hop in front.
And the driver is this man from Adelaide. Good bloke. Just got out and hucked it to the side of the road, and off we went. And I was like shocked. I was shocked.
I hope that wasn't early in your time there.
No, it was a bit. I was acclimated to the scene there at that time.
But
it was still shocking.
Your first day, it's like,
I know. What am I? No, it was. But no, it's cool.
What were the biggest differences? And by the way, you never mentioned in LinkedIn that you worked in New Zealand and France, so you better update that.
Yeah.
What would you say? Like, was there one striking difference that you noticed in terms of making wine, the culture, New Zealand, Australia, France? Obviously, there's a kabillion, but I'm just curious about your own thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, well, the old world mentality, I worked for a small family, and that was the first year they had a pneumatic press when I worked that first vintage. And that was, I did New Zealand,
and where
I went
in
to France after.
In
Chinon.
Yeah.
Pays de Loire, yeah. And there, you know, it's just, it's a family tradition. It's all of the people in the village work with them. It's this really familial experience. The wines, they are all about their terroir and where they're from. They were so pleased that vintage to have a pneumatic press, and also they bought some acreage and some plots in the La Capucin vineyard, and they were so pleased about that. They were so happy. And so it was this kind of overall just familial winemaking experience. It's just like everything. It's everything to them.
Yeah.
It's just kind of cool to see that, to see everyone, all hands on deck mentality. And it's just someone who like, that just oozes through their blood. It's just in them. All and right, it was really cool.
I got a question for you here. So give me the timeline between the small family one in Chenon versus Australia. Where'd you go first?
So I did New Zealand first, yep. And it's different hemispheres, so you can do two vintages in a year.
Yeah.
So I did New Zealand first, then I went to Europe and lived there for a year, did the vintage, and I went back, all the way back to Australia.
You must have got the wine bends going from Loire to Australia in terms of this four-story vat. Like you know how if you're deep-sea diving, you have to come up slowly because of the pressure or else it can kill you. You got the wine bends going from
cobblestone
roads in Loire to four stories in Western Australia.
Yeah, that's why I did it, to see the perspective,
right?
And then, you know, like... Plus, it was the only place that hired me, so I kind of had to.
Yeah, you don't need to say that.
But
there was a bidding war for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But actually, there was some other opportunities. But it was cool to get that perspective. I mean, I'm very glad that we did it, and it was kind of cool. And it was like, you know, it's funny. You get into that rhythm, you can keep it going. People do that. Mm-hmm. You know, people just go. You can do two vintages a year and just go back and forth and back and forth. So,
yeah.
And I had no experience, but I just picked it up through working 14-hour days in this business.
That's gutsy.
It just kind of worked. I was no problem working those hours. It was easy.
Yeah. Well, because you came from the restaurant business.
Exactly.
But that is gutsy. So you go from falling in love with wine with Montrachet, working at the working on the floor at Centro, and then deciding, that's it, I'm going to learn about wine, and I'm going to go make wine at a tiny family place in Loire. That's ballsy, Davis.
Yeah, it was nervous. Every step of the way was definitely unknown.
Yeah.
You know, I took a rickety train to the Loire. It was a good friend of mine here, Bernard Samwasser from Le Sommelier Wine Agency, that made the connection. And I was working in a restaurant in London, serving tables, and there was a lot of I made a lot of French friends in the restaurant, and they were able to fake a pretty awesome email to the winemaker Rodolphe in perfect French, saying that I wanted to go work for them. They were a bit surprised that my French was pretty broken when I showed up.
Oh, God.
But half the time I was just surprised that I was there doing it. Just that they were, you know what I mean? Like, it was pretty crazy. They gave me a little place to live in, across from the winery. I had like one gas burner. That's what I cooked with. You know, it was this old chalk kind of shack.
Yeah.
I had a bike to drive around on to get my food and stuff. They gave me a little bike.
But
cool.
That is such a stereotype. If you look at, like, say, the hero's journey of the wine person, starting at fresh, just bug-eyed and new, and then living off the little gas cooker and a bike. And
I had to fit that in. It makes me sound pretty cool.
It does. It's a great, like, it's a pretty awesome origin story. Before we continue the LinkedIn game, New Zealand. The one thing that always shocked me when I went there a bunch of years ago, I knew about the Syrahs and then obviously the Pinots.
Mm-hmm.
The Bordeaux blends.
Yeah.
I was amazed, even like the little place, Waiheke Island, which is, you know, just a little bit east of Auckland. I'm thinking, okay, it's a vacation tourist spot. And they're making some pretty killer Bordeaux blends up there. That's what surprised me the most about New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the climate and everything they do there, it's just perfect. Like, I remember, like, looking at... I was a very hard vintage in New Zealand when I was there. It was funny, all the guys were laughing at me because it was the most difficult vintage for, like, the decade. It rained the whole time.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, like, you saw the fruit coming in, and it was absolutely perfect. Like, I've never seen... Being at wineries and traveling and doing wine stuff and seeing sorting tables of wine come in and grapes, like, I've never seen that since I was in Marlborough. Like, the Pinot coming in was, like, perfect. So I'm sure the whatever they got going up there and on the North Island, they're doing good work up there too. It's
yeah
they're amazing. blessed.
Not to Benny. Cap captain and wine steward.
Mm-hmm.
First, explain what captain means, because it's again, it's a great title to have.
Yeah, I mean, a captain is a waiter, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it's an old school, like, European model of like a restaurant hierarchy of and service, where you'd have a captain, then a server assistant, then you'd have a wine steward, and so forth.
Yeah.
You know? So a captain was essentially a server, but you'd be a captain. There's other, like, there's also an old school service for people want to know, like chef de rang is another kind of term for a captain. That's what I was when I worked in London. You'd be a chef de rang,
mm-hmm.
which is weird. It's a server, but like, you take the orders, then a manager would punch your orders in for you. It's because weird levels of service. So, yeah, that's what a captain is.
And how was Nota Bene?
It was amazing, man. It was, you know, I started there, I think it was 4 or 5 months into when, you know, from their opening, and it was a special place, very special place. A lot of the people I worked with are kind of went into amazing roles in the city, and it's actually closed recently, but I learned so much there.
Did it? Wait, hold on. Not too many, like Queen.
Queen, yeah. It's not Atlanta.
What the hell is that?
Oh, it's a Chase hospitality group. It's a vegan, vegetarian based cuisine.
Oh.
And David Lee, the same chef, is heading it up. So I actually went to the friends and family last week. It was great.
How's Very the wine cool. list?
It's cool. It's well priced.
Yeah.
There is an orange wine and a natural wine section. Curated stylistically, and I don't know where they put all the all their back vintage first growths and stuff, but it's well priced. It's cool. It's very approachable. It's very funky. It's very now. It's very current. It's not that big. So I think everyone's going into that direction. We're trimming inventory and trying to really make special small wine lists.
Yeah, this makes me realize if this is true, and I wanted to ask you about the trends in the Toronto wine scene. Is there an underground of back vintages of beautiful wines from all across the world that's just sitting in cellars in buildings all across the city?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a handful of private cellar companies that sell their wine downtown Toronto. We've actually just have a a connection with the Vintage Conservatory on Richmond, and all their guests are able to come in, and when we waive one corkage for them,
mm-hmm.
so they can bring in their nice wine and come and have a margarita, pizza, with their with whatever they want to bring in, some Eschezo or whatever.
2010 Brunello di Montepulciano. Oh God, I'm going to mispronounce this. Your favorite, the Colimatoni.
Colimatoni.
Colimatoni Reserva.
Yeah.
Why is this? You said this is one of your favorite wines. What was it about this one? I got 94 from Sanderson, but why is this? What was it about this wine that spoke to you?
Just the depth and complexity of the wine, just classic Sangiovese characteristics. You know, it's Strat. It's kind of modern, but kind of rustic. You know, the Reservas have a little more oak aging. It's just classy and nice. It's kind of a reward wine. You know, not so funky esoteric, but a little polish. You know, the good thing about a wine like that is you can drink it and you can think about it and it opens up and it evolves. And it's, I had a chance to visit Montepulciano as well a few years back. So it holds a merely special for me. It's amazing place.
It's a bleeping Disneyland.
It is.
Like when you go up to the top of the mountain to that town, and it's Enoteca after Enoteca.
Yeah, beautiful.
It is heaven.
It's a fine wine region, right?
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, when you're there, it's. I always say this about Brunello and fine wine regions in general. Like when you are walking through the vineyards and you're there and you smell the wild rosemary and the thyme and you know, it's all of those things kind of get into the glass. You know, you think of their cuisine, like olives and tomatoes, and it's just the food's so nice and balsamic. And all of a sudden, you taste that wine, it brings you right back to all those smells and all those aromas and all those things. And like steak Fiorentina with like the... just all those beautiful herbs on it, off the grill, and all of those things. It just kind of takes you right back, and it makes your mouth water for all those beautiful things, right? So, I look at it like that as a wine that takes you to a place, and I think that's what they do because they're so indicative of the region and the varietal. They speak so true to where they're from that it's the soul of the earth, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. That's Now I wish, and I want to go back to Italy right now. as we end this, what are you hoping for? What are you hoping for? How long is Cantina Mercato been open for?
So we're in our fourth month, so it's very, very, very new. And and we're hoping for the summer to roll around. There's construction out here. They're beautifying Wellington, and you know the city's had issues building it out. But I just hope for like a we're gonna have a nice patio out there, and I want to expand the wine program, the wine list, and just keep on going with it and keep on making great experiences and build it out and just see what we can do with it. I think we have a cool opportunity. It's really nice, like a brand new car, having a new restaurant. And
yeah,
and I'm really excited for this company as well. Mercato's been around for 20 years, and we closed the Toronto Street location, which I worked at as a general manager there. It's a 20-year
business.
I love
that place. That place was cool, fantastic. Place. That was a great place.
It was, and people love it, but we're trying to do some cool stuff here. You know, we had the Enomatics there, I think before anybody. You know, it's 16 wines by the glass and red, and 24 in total. And so, we have the Verde Vin here, and we're just trying to build something cool here.
Yeah.
We're excited for the future, and I'm excited to bring more cool wines and keep on tasting. And then also training the new guys coming in, all my new managers, and it's exciting to see more people coming into the business and learning and showing them all about wine and tasting and growing. So
for people who want to come here, what's the address?
20 Wellington Street East.
Yeah, so right at Wellington and Yonge.
Yeah.
The great thing is you can get here very easily by subway, much more difficulty by car. Take a cab, take Lyft or whatever, but 7 days a week, or do you close?
7 days a week. We have brunch on the weekends, and then we're tying in a really cool pre-theater aspect of the business as well. Center and St. Lawrence Center is right there. We really want to make this a theater vibe. We're doing a giveaway with St. Lawrence with their the new Tchaikovsky ballet. They're doing Pro et Contra, which is going to be amazing. And we're really excited about that partnership, because I want this to be, I want it to be like the old school, like Allen's, on the Danforth, or Soto Soto with all the headshots of all the ballet dancers and stuff and their signature. And Dave was for the Cerasuolo d'Abruzzo.
Yeah.
That'd
be great.
And just kind of have that kind of kitschy kind of theater thing. I think it's a really cool thing to tie in. So we're excited about that.
Well, Davis, congratulations on the family, and you got more coming, and congratulations on all your success. It's really cool. As I said, you're the third person because we were in the same WSET classes together from the introductory all the way to to diploma. And it is, for me, it's fantastic to see everyone's success in an incredibly difficult arena. So congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you for having me. It was great talking with you. And stop by anytime.
I will.
You're my new 9 a.m. rosé drinking partner.
Sure.
Like I said, you got to fit it in.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Cheers.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Remember, rate and review, and find us wherever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.